I'm sorry, J-E-A-N-B-A-I-R-D. Again, J-E-A-N-B-A-I-R-D at shaw.ca. And you can also find it listed under that same title, the Stephen Hyten Fellowship on Facebook. And please do check all guidelines before submitting applications, and definitely contact Gene and get the full guidelines. Applications will close November 15th, 2024. And so, and yeah, please, yeah, there's so much information for me to even list here. Please get all of that before you attempt to apply or check into it. And I see we're about three quarters of a minute now into the second hour. It is almost 5:01, and you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Again, I'd like to mention that the open mic was a wonderful event again this month. Again, and there were many new faces as well. And in the second hour from that September 3rd, and the Journey Continues open mic event, you're going to hear in this hour readings by Bob Brules, Keen Ryan, Sarah Emtage, Alana Veach, Meg Freer, Sue Publicover, Eric Folsom, Kin Man Youngtai, Harlequin Crow, Abby Miole, Mike, and then me. And then following that, again in this hour, as I'd already alluded to, you will hear a book launch. You're going to hear Marv Daub launching his book called Bits and Pieces, Reflections of a Literary Pretension. And again, that was held at Novel Idea in late July. My apologies for it taking a while to get on the show, but I had all of those Art Fest events to try to also air in a timely manner. So I think everybody understands. So let's just do this. Here is my usual start of the hour announcement is this. Occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but it's all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. So let's move into that second round of readings that evening. Again, September 3rd at the Elm Cafe. And up first, in that first grouping of poets, you're going to hear readings by Bob Brules, Keen Ryan, Sarah Emtage, and Alana Veach. Here we go. There we go. Let's bring up our first poet of the second round, Bob Brules.
Hi, everyone. The title of this is the Hippopotamus Song. It's not my own. In fact, it is a song, and it makes me wonder if a melody was ever written for it. But some of you might be acquainted with it. A bold hippopotamus was standing one day on the banks of the cool Shalimar. He gazed at the bottom as it peacefully lay by the light of the evening star. Away on a hilltop sat combing her hair, his fair hippopotamine maid. The hippopotamus was no ignoramus, and he sang her this sweet serenade. Mud, mud, glorious mud, nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. The fair hippopotama he aimed to entice from her seat at the hilltop above. As she hadn't got a ma to give her advice, came tiptoeing down to her love. Like thunder, the forest re-echoed the sound of the song that they sang as they met. His inamorata adjusted her girder and lifted her voice in duet. Mud, mud, glorious mud. Nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. Now more hippopotami began to convene on the banks of that river so wide. I wonder now, what am I to say of the scene that ensued on the Shalimar side? They dived all at once with an ear-splitting splash, then rose to the surface again. A regular army of hippopotami, all singing this haunting refrain. Mud, mud, glorious mud. Nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. Yeah, thank you.
As we give Bob another hand, let's bring up Keen Ryan again.
Hello. So the second one is about the first job that I had here, which was washing dishes in a restaurant. And it's all tongue-in-cheek. I am not accusing any of these of the people I worked with of doing any of these things. It's all meant as a joke. But I think what it is, it's a parody of just anyone who's worked in the food industry knows how just crazy it can get sometimes. It's a culture. Anyway, this is called Dish Pig Squealing. My own mother called me a dish pig. How dare she? Corner, corner, corner. Coroner's office. Pick apart the carcass. Pickle it. Place the pieces in the insert in the oven till it scalds, piping. Pipe up. One more rumor to chug with ale. You've pervert's ears chasing the next tale. Corner, corner, cornier. Ways to talk. To tell the corner of your nose covets nuggets of Florida chalk. Pavlo's charcuterie, chef's espresso, Princess Street Parmesan. Get your debit card, pound it off the porcelain, enough talcum powder for the entire maternity ward. Looking sharp coming through, heard the news, peruse the clues, that things are tumbling down. I'm cornered, they're cornering me. Debt collectors mourning, death collating, laminated deeds. Pass it on to the rest of us to cover what he needs. A habit a cook couldn't feed. Uproot this weed, a planted seed, a plan we need for the morning. Keys are getting wider, but all that's getting higher is bills stacked prior. Did you see the faulty wire? Light a little grease fire. Overcook the second breakfast, return to the shire. Sip a Caesar, sire. Strife is coming through. A narrowly missed attack. Silence over the phone. Put the knife next to the one sticking from out my back. That's beside to you.
As we give Keen another hand, let's bring up Sarah Emptage.
This is called The Golden Key, and it's based on one of my favorite fairy tales. It's also called The Golden Key. The red sun raises a rainbow in the forest of fairyland, and the golden key it gives to me is held fast in my hand. I don't know yet what the key unlocks, but I can hear the bear and fox speaking beside me in the wood. The shadows fall from somewhere good. Thank you.
As we give Sarah another hand, let's bring up Alana Beach.
So not ready. Sorry about that. So I brought another poem that isn't mine. It is by Nancy Viva Davis Halifax. I won't talk more about it because I won't do it justice. I'll just read it. On Monday night, Jenny slips onto the couch, spills herself into a cup of tea. Exhausted by here, 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 and here, I watch her stained fingers smooth wrinkles on her skirt, touch ear, then teacup, return to skirt, to hair. No motion stranded. She plucks out evidence, ivory, moon, drywall, shortbread, picket fences, bone, maggot, colors, the tired lines of the day.
And you just heard from the September 3rd and the Journey Continues open mic reading at the Elm Cafe, readings by Bob Bruhls, Keen Ryan, Sarah Emtage, and Alana Veach. Up next, you're going to hear readings by Meg Freer, Sue Public-Over, Eric Folsom, and Kinman Young Tai. Here we go.
So we give Alana another hand. Let's bring up Meg Freer.
It's called Mornings Persist in Fire and Ice. After dreams of deep valley recipes shaped and baked over a billion years, visions of mountains that serve up plates of crust and wind and ice, layered flakes that flow outward across the ice sheet, bubbles of air, ash from volcanoes and fires, pebbles and diamonds in rocky gorges, lakes that sculpt basins, sheer winds that tug shorelines into crescent moon shapes, until moss tufts on every hill pluck time from stones in a panorama of falling snow.
To give Meg another hand, let's bring up again Sue Public-Over.
Not intentionally, I think I'm in outer space with my choices tonight. This one's called Orion. Cold autumn night. I'm bundled in the hammock, breathing stardust, breathing in the universe, longing to be where the blackened night sky stretches without boundary of buildings and unnatural light, watching Gemini and Taurus creep by, Orion in their midst, defiant through the haze. A plane emerges from the dark shadows of the roof next door. I watch it, crossing through Orion. I watch it crossing through Orion. The flight path and my swaying hammock set a singular perspective, a moment never again to be replicated. All lovers of the universe are mine tonight. Orion, rising and setting with the sun, reckons the year, our vision restored. I could do worse than Orion for a lover.
So give Sue another hand. Let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Okay, thank you. I'm back. PBS, a couple of nights ago, ran a documentary about the Everly Brothers. So, of course, I've had some of those great old tunes in my head. You know, one of them, you know, dream, 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 dream. And today I'm thinking about, well, what am I going to bring to the... And then I remembered this poem that I translated from Jean Cocteau. With a really simple line in it that I struggled with, because I didn't quite know how to color it. You know, it was, songe, songe, songe. So like, oh, it's the Everly Brothers. It's dream, dream, dream. Songe, songe, songe. Anyway, so this is a little Jean Cocteau poem that I've translated. It's Mes Oreilles Sourdes, My Deaf Ears. And this is my translation, which turns out to be Jean Cocteau meets the Everly Brothers. My impaired hearing in this shoddy world comes from my swimming where deep waters swirled. Those waves interfere with setting out nets, hauling to the pier, life good as it gets. I'll dive through the stream. There I'll be all right to dream, dream, and dream, fishes of my night.
So give Eric another hand. Let's bring up Kin Man Young Tai.
This one is loosely based on Thomas Transtoma, I think, Half Finished Heaven. A day after, with yesterday a blank page, like a thorn piercing you in the care of a rose. Your path finding the many that depart from yours. Arguments, rebuttals, and doubts like drops in a rainfall, running courses to moisture, mist, and sometimes clouds. In a desert so different than in the heavily forested. Worse, unspoken within yourself, thoughts lighter than air. You observe what you think is also silent and find the noise that is so many stars in a dark sky. A feat and distraught, a loss you bemoan, that another makes rich. Impressed by a poem, making more of Vermeer's lady reading a letter, you wondered how constricted is a home with its doors and windows. Home, where you should find yourself whole and resurrected, in a world where you find yourself a fragment in search of others. Thank you.
And you just heard again from the September 3rd, and the Journey Continues, a monthly open mic reading at the Elm Cafe in that reading series. Readings by Meg Freer, Sue Public Cover, Eric Folsom, and Kin Man Young Tai. Up next, you'll hear the final readings of the evening, actually, by Harlequin Crow, Abby Mioli, Mike, and then me. So here we go.
As we give Kin Man another hand, let's bring up, I think we're up to Harlequin Crow again. Let's bring him up.
So if anybody was at Art Fest in July, I read this one there, but I haven't actually read it here yet, so figured why not. Rainbow Flames. My existence is a crime. Punishable, at best, in public lacerations of flesh. Shame beaten into a body for daring closeness with another. As cane strokes strive to carve away more than blood and skin. Punishable, at worst, in state-sanctioned lynching before a firing squad of stones, as each impact strives to destroy more than just a person. A life snuffed in hate, in pain. And yet, I'll rise in rainbow flames. my existence offends so greatly as to embolden bigots to make battlegrounds of bathrooms, banish from public space, public consciousness, anyone who fails adherence to the narrowest definition of normal. Existence overwhelmed through shame. And yet, again, I'll rise in rainbow flames. My existence is misunderstood. Fodder for each adolescent wit who treats identities as insults, punchlines, and porn searches, each evoked in service of someone else's ego. Or worse, all those who dismiss integral truth as just a phase. But still, I'll rise in rainbow flames. So pierce me with the pins for affixing uncounted pink triangles, and march me towards more industrialized solutions. Or claim divine providence justifies ignoring when my body is ravaged by a plague. Keep threatening your lake of fire of pain, then watch me rise in rainbow flames.
As we give Harlequin another hand, let's bring up Abby Miole again.
So I've been swimming a lot lately, and it's been very healing, and I went swimming today and wrote this poem after. It does not have a title. The water is the body's blank canvas, arms and legs swimming like smooth brush strokes in a field of waves unbounded, a pool of shapeless potential, a space of liberation where we return to the creation of all life on Earth. The water is the womb, where waves are made, folded, and crashed by the pull of the moon, the same force of gravity that fastens our feet to the grass and keeps our ears in tune to hear the same song of love. The same song of love. We've all heard it before. We've all sung it before. We've all been here before. Eventually, you will live in this body again. You know death is really rebirth when you wade in the water and paint waves with your body where all life on Earth began. Thank you.
And as we give Abby another hand, let's bring up another first-time reader here. Let's bring up Mike.
So, yeah, welcome, everybody. It's my first time here. I've been here for a few years, posted in with the military. So I'm going to read an old one from Rudyard Kipling. This is not my own. This is a famous one. I like to be inspirational and stuff, so I pick something I thought would be inspirational. So it's If, a poem that was written, I believe it was from a father to his child. So I'm kind of coming at this from as if I'm talking to my son and daughter. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet triumph and disaster and treat both those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it all on one turn of a pitch and toss, and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your long turn after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor living friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Thank you.
If I can make a brief comment about that, I walk a lot in Kingston. And I believe it's on the corner of Napier, or Napier, whatever it is, and Park Street. There's a house there that has like a, just like a little placard thing, but they have typed. They had typed that poem.
Really?
I had seen that, yeah, there. So anyway, let's give Mike another hand. Now, is there anybody else that came in or that I skipped over that wanted to read before I read a final poem and we end the night? Okay. Before I do it, though, let's give one more hand to everybody else who's read tonight. Some wonderful readings. And again, to Grace for taking good care of us tonight. And just a reminder, too, that the next one is going to be on October 1st. So it's the same time, same place. This is a short poem. It's called There. This day forever, hanging on an ever thread of time, will remember itself as perfectly as it was. You and I, here in it now, will each remember it differently and temporarily and as imperfectly as each of us are. Thank you. And just before we close, thank you all for coming out tonight. You are what makes this the beautiful reading series that it is. So my thanks to all of you.
And from, again, the very final readings that evening at the September 3rd and the Journey Continues monthly open mic at the Elm Cafe, you heard readings by Harlequin Crow, Abby Miole, Mike, and then me. It is about almost 29 minutes after 5 o'clock. Tell you what, let's do this, and I'll be right back and we'll move into that book launch that I'd mentioned at the start of the hour, and it is with Merv Dobb. And let's do this.
Thank you. Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast to Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Have you been dumped? Left all alone? Just want to find your soulmate? Look no further, because your new best friend is waiting for you at the Kingston Humane Society. The Kingston Humane Society is a nonprofit animal organization founded in 1884 that is supported solely by the community, receiving no government funding to assist in their mission of caring for injured, abused, and homeless animals, with the goal of creating families and homes for the animals. They are the only open shelter in the region, accepting every animal brought to them with compassion, respect, and humane assistance. If you want to donate to help these animals find their best friends, or if you're interested in finding the new love of your life, please visit KingstonHumaneSociety.ca. Everyone just needs a little love.
Domestic pets like dogs and cats are often left outside off-leash. These pets scare wildlife, destroy the nests of animals, and attack animals.
Always keep your pets on a leash when they are outside and discourage them from chasing wildlife.
This message was brought to you by the students of St. Marguerite Bourgeois Catholic School and Sandy Pines Wildlife Center.
Two out of three geese. Six out of seven seagulls. And this Transylvanian owl. All agree that if they had their own radios, they would tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting just for you from Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. It is just approaching 32 minutes after 5 o'clock. We do have a launch yet to air this afternoon. Before we do that, though, I'd like to thank all of you very much for having tuned into the show so far today. And as we begin to finish up, and my heartfelt thanks again, as always, to all the poets who came out to share their work at the open mic that evening, again, along with the many others who came to visit and listen and support. And again, to Grace and the Elm Cafe itself for that space, and Grace for taking care of us that evening. And let's go ahead now and move into a launch that I recorded about 2 months ago. It was in late July, and it was a launch by Merv Dobb and with his book, Bits and Pieces, Reflections of Literary Pretension. And again, this was held at Novel Idea. Without further ado, and again, my apologies for taking so long to get it to air. Here is Merv Dobb with his launch that evening.
Well, you can do both. I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. I was not expecting, although I did prepare, which is a good professorial trick, something in case I was asked to read, and Oscar said you should read. And not only that, but this gentleman in blue holding up his phone here is from CFRC, the campus radio station, and he has a very nice blog type thing on CFRC about authors and things like that. And so you can hear it twice, right, if you wish. I've said to people that I... some people retire and they paint. I retire and I write, and I'm not sure why I made that choice, other than I'm a terrible painter. Writing was my only choice. But I have written bits and odds and sods ever since I wrote a small piece for the high school yearbook many, many, many years ago. And it's always been a bit of a solace. And as Tom said earlier, it's kind of an outlet for psychic energy that that you can't otherwise dispense with other than riding around on bikes and running and lifting weights. So it may seem a little bit odd from somebody who played football and all these sports, but this is kind of what I do, and so here I am. The first three books I published were these are published. They're on Amazon. You can buy them, and you can buy them here. Is a kind of a life autobiographical thing, semi. Okay. In this, barely disguised. It's an old, you know, the old Romanic clay in France, where people wrote thinly disguised autobiographies in the form of novels. That's what this thing is. And then I always had this little bee in my bonnet about my French experience. And so I published this in the middle of COVID. And that's why we didn't get a chance to get together, but it's called The Memory of the Heart. And it's about my French experiences, thinly disguised. And then The Bits and Pieces is the most recent one, maybe the last, I'm not sure, which is a collection of stuff that I've had that I didn't know what else to do with, right? And I finally came on a nice little book, as I say here, by McCall Smith a while ago, in which he had a collection of short stories that he wasn't sure what he was doing with them and where they were going to go, and he put them all together in a book, and I thought, well, I can do that too. So it's Reflections of a Literary Pretension, and so I think that in itself is self-explanatory. But I'm a chronological guy. I don't quite know why, but I am. So the first little bit that I will read from is The Memory of the Heart, which is a story basically about a German industrialist who vacations in a small fishing village in Brittany, on the Breton coast, just west of Saint-Malo. And he runs into an artist woman with whom he has a relationship over a relatively short period of time, and she dies of cancer. And so it's a story about this relationship and how it ends and sort of what it means. And for me, it was a bit of a closing of a chapter as far as I was concerned psychologically, a connection with my second wife, and yes, who many of you will know. Anyways, this is from part two, and she does not appear. She is Suzanne, but this guy is Eckhart, and the German industrialist is Eckhart von Ryan. That was the first thing that came to my mind, curiously enough.
That's
Chris. Right? And I thought, where did that come from, right?
From a movie, Murphy.
Is it? Did it?
Came from von Ryan's Express.
Oh, well, it could be. I don't know. These things come out of... Anybody who writes or anybody knows who paints, right, knows in... that these things come from places you don't know where they come from, right? And so, anyways, this is the start of part two, and it's a reflects a dinner that actually happened. It was early in the evening on a late fall day in Paris as Eckhart walked along the quay heading up towards the Eiffel Tower. The rain fell on the cobblestone pavement like the steady beating of a drum, and it was gray everywhere. The weather, the buildings, and everything else around, except from time to time for the odd car, which flashed some color as it passed. Dull, uninspiring, getting darker and darker on a day much like it had been in Stuttgart when he left. Partly because of the weather, he decided on the train. But he also never liked risking the Mercedes, which he owns. Wonder who that is. On some of the narrow Parisian streets, even though he had on occasion done so. Besides, the metro was so good he knew he could get to pretty much anywhere he needed to go without much walking. What with the rain, it was a good thing, too, that his hotel was more or less central to everything, being up one of the little side streets on the south side of the Seine just opposite Notre Dame. It had meant only a short walk to the subway, two quick stops, and a bit more walking before he'd reached the Avenue de Suffren. It ran perpendicular to the river on the west side of the Champ Mars, where the Eiffel Tower was located. He had his umbrella up and so was dry enough except for his feet, which would surely be wet by the time he reached the destination. He and Suzanne had agreed to meet for a drink and dinner at a restaurant on the avenue, mostly because it was just across the Champ from her apartment on the Avenue de la Bourdonnais, virtually in the shadow of the tower to the east. Because of his work on the new facilities, he's a German industrialist, and they've just bought some property in eastern Germany at the time of the wall coming down. Because of his work on the new facilities, it had been a busy few months for Eckert. He traveled back and forth to Dresden several times to supervise the work there and had had little time to get to Paris. They talked regularly on the phone, of course, and he'd learned that she'd stayed on in Saint-Armel, that is the small little fishing village, another month or so before returning to the city in October. Her painting seemed to be going well, and she reported feeling okay but said little else. Her voice had certainly sounded strong on the phone, and her usual enthusiasm for life seemed undiminished. Still, Eckert was not sure what to expect when they met, and not just for health reasons. They'd parted on warm and intimate terms, and he knew he still felt strongly about her. That had not gone away. What he wasn't sure of was whether it was reciprocated, and whether she felt as she had before he left. Perhaps she was similarly unsure of the ground. One thing was certain. They were both about to find out. Wet with the rain and the umbrella and all, he seemed to come on the restaurant suddenly about two blocks in from the quay. It was on a corner with a hedged-in patio that still had tables out under an awning, and they would surely all be gone soon, given that the weather had obviously turned for the worse now. It was far too late in the year to be sitting out, especially for dinner in the evenings. Inside it was small, warm, and dry. Wood-paneled walls with low lighting gave it a cozy, welcoming feeling, especially on such a wet and cold night. Eckert was careful to shake the water off his umbrella and stamp his feet to do the same thing once again, regretting that he'd forgotten to bring rubbers with him. He then handed everything, including his coat, to an older woman who'd come forward to greet him at the door. All right. And then it goes on from a dinner and so on and so forth. And an exposition and painting and then a person getting sick and eventually dying. Right? One other thing from Bits and Pieces. This is kind of my favorite poem, although there are lots of other ones in here that are interesting. But I like to write poems, and poems are extremely difficult to write. If anybody's ever spent any time trying to write poetry, it's a very difficult thing to do. At least I find it is. Anyways, this poem is called A Great White Horse. I came upon a great white horse in a deep green field, in a deep green field by a motorway, a long way from home. Alone was he, for he surely be. Just so was it also with me. Was lost was he so much like me, and so unsure as where in that morn's air exactly lay the best route home. But the sun shone bright, and my, how his white stood out in that deep green field. Mm-hmm. Right? That's my great white horse. That's it. Okay. So there is wine, and there's cheese, and there's cookies, and there's a lot of good folks right here, so you should talk to each other.
So Merv,
yo,
when they had dinner inside in that nice cozy space, did the chemistry get resolved?
Yes, it did.
Okay,
it did. They continued the relationship.
Would you care to say one more sentence about the resolution?
The resolution
it's
is...
It's so suspenseful, not knowing.
To keep reading the book.
I have to read the book, yes,
you'll have to book.
And I haven't read it, so...
Okay, Merv, you
don't
can't...
Tell.
No, you can't
tell.
Right. All right.
No, it does get resolved.
Okay.
Regrettable. Any other great questions about my scribblings?
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you,
Mark. You're welcome.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Most of us know that you are bilingual, and it's revealed in some of your writings. Have you ever written any poetry in French or
no.
any
No, I have thought
stories.
About that.
No, You've
stories.
Thought about it.
I have thought about it, but I haven't done. And partly the problem is that my written French is terrible. Okay, my oral French is not too bad, but my written French is terrible, and I would not want to start down that route. But it's a good question, and it's something I have thought about, especially the poetry. But, good question.
Book of puns in French.
Puns
Book
in French,
puns,
yeah.
Do German.
Yeah,
German.
German. Yeah.
Trilingual.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks
very much.
And you just heard a recording done on July 23rd of a launch by Merv Daub and with his book, Bits and Pieces, Reflections of a Literary Pretension, that was done at Novel Idea Bookstore. My thanks to him for allowing me to air that launch, and my heartfelt thanks as well to Novel Idea for always being such a wonderful and welcoming venue to host the many launches that and readings that happen there. I do have several minutes again at the during this hour to share some upcoming events, and you know what? I think I'm going to move into calls for submissions first, and then we'll come back to events. I've already taken you well into next week with a series of book launches at Novel Idea. Coming up, but before we get into all of that, just a heartfelt thank you to all of you who have tuned into this second hour of the show today. It is almost 47 minutes after 5 o'clock. I do have one song that will take us out of here at the end of the hour, and I also want to thank Merv and Novel Idea and all the poets again who took part in the open mic at the Elm Cafe in September and who were all part of the show today. And before I move into the events, too, I should probably credit you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live as well at www.cfrc.ca. And before I forget, just my usual reminder at the end of each hour is to let you know that both hours of this show each week are uploaded to my blog space for it, usually shortly after I get home, which is usually about 7 o'clock. And you can find it there at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com for up to about 3 years. But tonight I'm going to be later because I'm headed straight from here to Novel Idea again for another book lunch this evening. So it's going to be closer to 9 o'clock Eastern time before I get that uploaded. So I just wanted to point that out. A lot of people are used to just tuning in there if they've missed the show at 7 expecting to hear it. And I'm sorry that it's going to be a bit later this evening. So, yeah. So let's go ahead and move into some calls for submissions, and then I'll start to, we've got about 5 minutes, and then I'll start to introduce what you'll hear to take us out of here and what'll happen after that then, too. There is a call out that has a deadline on October 16th, 3 a.m. deadline. That's a Wednesday, October 16th. It is Tribute to the High Bun. Rattle Poetry is, and this is for their spring 2025 issue. It says, we'll be dedicated to the high bun form and we'll explore contemporary high bun. Submit a poem may be any length or subject, but must combine haiku with other forms of writing. So go to their website, rattle.submittable.com/submit. And again, deadline October 16th. I have another one here with a deadline of October 27th. It's a novel excerpt contest, and it's with the Master's Review. The Master's Review will be awarding a total of $3,500 and online publication. Please check out this link here for more information and guidelines. Mastersreview.com and then /submissions open 2024 novel excerpt contest. Guest judged by Tanya James. Those all have hyphens between them, so a dash between them. But if you get half of that in there, I think it will probably take you right to the site. And then also on October 27th, so another one, the same deadline, the 2024 Flash Prose Prize, and this is with Kraft. And they say the 2024 Kraft Prose Prize is open and will award in total $3,600. So you can find their information guidelines at www.craftliterary.com. And then just type in the words Kraft Flash Prose Prize 2024, and that'll take you there. Another one with a deadline of Thursday, October 31st. This is the one you hear me announce all the time. It is a monthly award. It is ARC Poetry. It is their Award of Awesomeness Award. And it says their deadline, and I'll just say their deadline is always the last day of each month. It's open to everyone. The prize is 50% of prize money raised and a rare vintage award item. So here's the link for the prompt. There is usually a theme as well, I believe, so you can check that out. ARC Poetry, and that's ARC, arcpoetry.ca /contest/ ARC Award of Awesomeness. Again, that deadline is Thursday, October 31st. And then there's one November 1st, the 2024 Foster Poetry Prize, CVT. CV2 is the publication that is sponsoring this and putting this on. It's for emerging poets only. The Foster Poetry Prize, it says, is a writing contest for emerging poets any age. A first prize and three others will get cash plus publication in CV2. Go to their website, Contemporary Verse 2, and that is the numeral 2. So it's contemporaryverse2.ca/Foster Poetry Prize. Again, deadline is November 1st. Again, I mentioned, and I will just mention it briefly, I mentioned it in the first hour in more detail, but there's a brand new Stephen Hyten Fellowship that's being offered. It was just announced at Kingston Writers Fest last Saturday night. So, and it is the Alperty A-Frame Association in collaboration with the Department of English and Creative Writing at Queen's University and Kingston Writers Fest are launching the Stephen Hyten Fellowship. Again, contact, go to and check out first. The details are on Facebook. Go to their page that has that same title, the Stephen Hyten Fellowship. You'll find lots of information there. But contact Jean Bard, that's JeanBaird at shaw.ca for details. You will need those. The full calls are there. The deadline is coming up November 15th to apply for it. So what it will offer is $10,000, a six-week residency at the Purdy A-Frame, a week-long residency at Queen's University in association with creative writing at Queen's, and then also profiled, it's called, position at the Kingston Writers' Fest to be called the Stephen Hyten Happening, which was what the event was called last Saturday night. My heartfelt thanks to each of you out there for having tuned in today. I do hope you stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music. That's hosted by Rob Carnell. That's coming up right at the top of the hour. I do have, I mentioned a song. Let me see if I'm queued up here. Looks like it. A song to take us there, Anthea Fever, a good friend of mine, she put out an EP a few years ago that I absolutely love. I just got her new album that just came out, and I love it very much as well. So I thought I would go ahead and include a song off of it. It's called Summer's Morning, and the CD, and the track you're going to hear is called Eleanor. And again, thank you very much for tuning in this afternoon, listening to the show. I hope you have a great week. Here we go. Thanks a lot.
Everything inside.